Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 900,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The Florida legislature moves to restrict abortion, even though similar moves in other states have been overturned by the courts.
I'm not affecting the woman's right to choose. What I'm trying to do is making sure that when she's made that choice, it's a safe choice.
Also tonight, marriage equality is the law of the land, but advocates and allies have been saying all along there's still more work to do. Today, before a Senate panel, hard work ahead was on full display.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And going forward on questions, like I said, I don't think we can properly vet this bill in 4 minutes.
We'll also get the latest legislative action on the salaries paid the state's supervisors of elections and learn why the state's school teachers may soon be saying, "Time for recess, kids. It's the law." I'm Tom Flanagan, day two of week three in the 2016 Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. A bill that could restrict abortion access is moving through the Florida legislature, but Kate Payne reports similar admitting privileges laws don't pass muster in other states.
A bill filed by Republican Senator Kelly Stargell of Lakeland mandates hospital admitting privileges for abortion providers. Stargell wants these doctors to have relationships with local hospitals, allowing them to bring in patients for care. Stargell says the bill is about women's health and safety.
I'm not affecting the woman's right to choose. What I'm trying to do is making sure that when she's made that choice, it's a safe choice.
But similar laws were ruled unconstitutional and struck down in Wisconsin, Mississippi, and Alabama. The Supreme Court is scheduled to take up the Texas admitting privilege law later this year. The questionable constitutionality aside, opponents call the measure medically unnecessary and aimed at shutting down abortion clinics. And Senator Arthenia Joyner of Orlando agrees with them.
This body would never, ever pass anything that would restrict a man's right to do what he wants to do with his body. And it's time for us to consider that as women, the majority of the voters in this country and in this state, that we should have that right to decide what's best for us.
Research suggests that abortions are already safe. A recent study published in the journal Obstetrics and Gynecology found that abortion is safer than childbirth. Women are 14 times more likely to die giving birth than to die from an abortion. And public health experts are challenging the argument for admitting privileges. According to the American Public Health Association, these laws make it especially difficult for low-income patients to get abortions. Senator Eleanor Sobel of Hollywood says the bill is a stumbling block for healthcare providers.
So the witch hunt has to stop against Planned Parenthood. Currently, there's no state funding for abortion in the state of Florida, and I'm afraid that the reaction to what we're experiencing today hurts prevention.
The bill would also ban public funding for abortion clinics. But Planned Parenthood and others don't only provide abortions. They provide contraception, pap smears, and STD tests. Opponents worry the provision will restrict access to preventative health care for low-income Floridians. Senator Oscar Brainin of Miami Garden says defunding health care providers isn't a fix.
So it's almost as if we're simply saying we don't want low-income women to have a place to go to receive these services if we continue to take options off of the table. And I just can't in good conscience do that. I just can't.
The Senate Health Policy Subcommittee heard emotional testimony from both sides of the issue Tuesday. Gabrielle Garcia Vera represents the National Latina Institute for Reproductive Rights.
This is unacceptable. And as someone who is both a birth advocate and who has supported women through the difficult decision of abortion, We as a community stand con nuestra gente, nuestra comunidad, y nuestras familias, with our people, our communities, and our families in standing in opposition to this bill.
John Stemberger represents the Florida Family Policy Council.
The Clinton administration developed a phrase that came to characterize what it meant to be pro-choice or pro-abortion rights. And that phrase, what we want to see abortion to be safe, rare, and legal. If that is still the definition of what it means to be pro-choice or pro-abortion rights, then you can still affirm this bill.
Senator Stargell says abortion regulation shouldn't be taboo.
So I'm tired of the double standard. When you're talking about abortion, we can't have a conversation. We're talking about the other things we can. I want to make sure that we're on the same page and that we as policymakers are adequately regulating abortions the same way that we're regulating similarly situated facilities.
The Senate Health Policy Subcommittee voted Tuesday to continue that conversation. Stargell's bill passed 5-3. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Today marks 7 months since the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in favor of marriage equality. But while marriage is legal in Florida, so is discrimination. Nick Evans reports some state lawmakers want to change that, but they've got a long way to go.
Last June was a moment of celebration in the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled same-sex couples have the right to marry under the 14th Amendment's equal protection provisions.
But in many places in the state of Florida, you can still be fired simply for just being gay, and we really need to work on that.
That's David Richardson, a Democratic representative from Miami Beach. Many jurisdictions in Florida have passed local ordinances to protect LGBT rights, but state lawmakers are attempting to extend those protections throughout the state. Wellington Democratic Senator Joseph Abruzzo has filed a bill prohibiting discrimination based on sexual orientation, real or perceived, and gender identity or expression.
Members, we quite possibly have one of the most significant civil rights bills in the past 40 years in front of you right now. Current state law prohibits discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodations on the basis of race, color, religion, sex, national origin, age, handicap, or marital status. The Florida Competitive Workforce Act adds sexual orientation and gender identity within these protected class.
Now, normally this is the part of the story where you'd hear voices speaking out in support or opposition of Abruzzo's proposal, but that'll have to wait. His measure came up last in a two-hour judiciary hearing packed with 9 other bills. There was just 6 minutes left when he was finally allowed to introduce the measure.
We've got three, 4 minutes to look at legislation that's the largest civil rights legislation we've done in 40 years. It's not possible, is it?
That's Trilby Republican Wilton Simpson. And Abruzzo grew visibly frustrated as Simpson and fellow Republicans Kelly Stargell and David Simmons ran out the clock on his proposal.
This bill has been in front of the legislature for probably close to 10 years now, or close to it. So I think 10 years is adequate. If you're unfamiliar with the issue, I'd be happy to speak with you about it.
Instead, the committee devoted most of its time to this.
We just want protection for the pastors where you can stand flat-footed in your pulpit and preach the word of God. You could preach the word of God from your pulpit with no fear, no doubt. No one after your sermon, you're going to walk out the door and you're going to be handcuffed. Or later on, you're going to lose your tax exempt from your church. We just want assurance policy. All we're asking for is assurance policy. That's all we're asking for today.
That's Elder Demetrius Brinson from the Miami area. He's speaking in support of the so-called Pastor Protection Bill sponsored by Fernandina Beach Republican Aaron Bean.
What this bill does is designed to ensure that pastors, clergy members, and churches are not required to perform marriages or related ceremonies that might violate their sincerely held religious beliefs. And it makes clear.
Of course, critics argue with protections for the free exercise of religion in the state and U.S. constitutions, there's little reason to spend any time at all on Bean's measure. Carlos Guillermo Smith of Equality Florida says pastors can already decide who they will or won't marry.
And that's the way that it should be. And I'm going to actually take that a step further and let everyone know that if a same-sex couple in Florida were to sue a pastor or a church or a house of worship for refusing to marry them, that Equality Florida would be the first to stand behind that pastor or that church.
The committee approved Bean's pastor protection bill on a party-line vote. And with the chairs of its next two committee staffs voting in favor of the measure, it seems likely to make it to the Senate floor. As for the LGBT protections bill, well, here's Judiciary Chairman Miguel Diaz de la Portilla.
I intend to have this bill back before us next week. It'll be the first bill that we hear next week. And we're going to dedicate plenty of time to this bill.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Well, if anyone thought that Florida Surgeon General John Armstrong was going to have an easy time getting confirmed by the state Senate today, that thought was very wrong. The confirmation was put off today with the chairman of the Senate Health Policy Committee saying the panel simply didn't have time to get to the nomination. Senator Aaron Bean, Republican from Fernandina Beach, said he pushed back the hearing to make sure the committee had time to fully consider a controversial abortion bill and several other pieces of legislation. Bean, who backs Armstrong, said the hearing would be rescheduled. Armstrong came under fire from senators last year amid a fight between Governor Rick Scott, who appoints the Surgeon General, and the Senate over whether to adopt a plan to expand health coverage for low-income Floridians. Armstrong's also been criticized for Florida having the highest new HIV infection rate in the country. Bean said he believes Armstrong has the votes to get approved by the committee and blamed the trouble the Surgeon General has faced in part on the health care debates that consumed the latter half of last year's session. Armstrong must be confirmed by the Senate this year to keep his position. Still to come on Capitol Report, a former Florida governor is wading into the debate as to what should happen to the remains buried on the property of the Dozier School for Boys.
Some have told me their stories of abuse, some sexual abuse, and so it was a horrible experience, finally coming to an end. Senator Joyner's bill, I think it would be the right step.
Florida election supervisors get paid less than their constitutional county counterparts, and some lawmakers charge that could stem from sexism.
In the 60s, most county officials were men, but most supervisors of elections were women. And the primary duty was to tally paper election ballots once every 2 years, so their salaries were considerably lower.
And to play or not to play, for elementary schools, the issue of recess isn't that simple.
Because if our school districts aren't taking responsibility for the well-being of our children, then it's up to us to take that responsibility.
Support for Capital Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth and productivity of Florida depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust encourages all businesses to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital staff members. More information is at abletrust.org.
Just off the heels of Governor Rick Scott and the Florida Cabinet receiving their final report on the Dozier School for Boys, another Florida governor is throwing his weight behind reburial efforts in the form of two bills that passed today. We get that story from Sasha Cordner.
Just last week, Governor Scott and the Florida Cabinet got a final update on the exhumations of the Dozier grounds. 55 remains of boys believed to have died and were buried there due to alleged abuse at the former Mariana Reform School had been found years ago. University of South Florida researchers say 7 of the remains have been positively ID'd, and there could be more on the way. But there are questions surrounding what to do with the unclaimed remains, as well as the historical records and artifacts associated with the Panhandle property. As to where to lay the unclaimed remains, some have said they should be reburied on the Dozier grounds, but Bill Price falls in the other camp. He's the vice president of the White House Boys Organization. They're a group of men, former boys of the North Florida Reform School, who say they were abused in a white building known as the White House.
These kids were not taken care of in life, and we're afraid that they're not going to be taken care of in death. And that's why we would like to have them interred somewhere other than Jackson County. We would like to have proper burials for them and set aside some sort of monument at the school for the White House.
Others, like Dale Landry with the Tallahassee chapter of the NAACP, had asked the cabinet to support legislative efforts to give compensation to those who want to rebury their loved ones.
I would just ask you all to reach out and support the legislators that are trying to move to get the funds to pay, because as you are aware, on several of the remains that have come forward that they have identified, they have had to go out and raise money in the public to ask people to donate, when that's the state responsibility to reinter those bodies.
The cabinet appeared receptive, and this week lawmakers took the first steps in passing two bills in the House and Senate to do just that. Former Florida Governor Bob Martinez is among those who supports the legislation. When he was younger, he says he remembers how scary the thought of being sent to Dozier was for him.
I'm native to Tampa, and I can recall as a youngster that if you misbehaved or you disobeyed, you was often hear you're going to end up in Mariana. And you sort of grew up thinking that must be one hell of a hellhole. These youngsters have been in a potter's field basically all this time. without markers or identification. And I think they deserve every opportunity. Those that have families that will claim the remains once identified to be reinterred in a proper place.
Over the past couple of years, a Republican has also been advocating on behalf of the White House boys.
I've had the opportunity over time to talk. Some of those are still living, and some have told me their stories of abuse, some sexual abuse. And so it was a horrible experience finally coming to an end. Senator Joyner's bill, I think it would be the right step in terms of Florida putting an end to a very dark period that existed from the early 1900s.
Senate Democratic Leader Athenia Joyner is carrying a bill to make sure there is a memorial for the unclaimed remains through a task force created by the Department of State.
We want to create this task force so they can make recommendations regarding the creation and maintenance of a memorial and the location of where it should be. In addition, the bill would allow funds for the reinterment of the bodies of those persons whose ID has been identified and those yet to be identified.
Through her bill, the state must pay $7,500 each for the reburial or reimburse the families who want to bury their loved ones themselves. Joyner says, like Martinez, she'd heard some terrible stories as well. She recalls as a young woman, she heard about Dozier from some of her classmates in high school who went there. As a teacher, she later taught some of the former Dozier kids.
And that one year that I taught, 64-65, United States history at Booker Washington Junior High School in Tampa, Florida, I had one class that the third period class had 43 students in it, and 13 of those students had been to Mariana. So they personally related to me what happened to them there.
Her Senate measure got full support during its first hearing Tuesday. The House measure by Tampa Democratic Representative Edna Rain unanimously passed its first committee as well. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Pay equity is a topic that's gotten a lot of attention over the past 40 years or so. Today, there are precious few people who would insist women should get paid less than men for doing the same work. However, Florida created a formula in the 1960s for deciding election supervisors' salaries that seems to harken back to that time when pay disparity between the sexes was simply the way things were. Now, one lawmaker's insisting the plan wasn't fair then, and it's even less fair now, as we hear from Regan McCarthy.
Over time, David Ramba, a lobbyist for the Florida State Association of Supervisors of Election, says what may have once been a relatively easy job for election supervisors has changed significantly.
You know, we used to have just an election day. We got to absentee ballots, and that increased the workload a bit for supervisors of elections. And then we, you know, more recently moved to absentee ballots where you didn't have to be absent. You could just request it. So, I mean, we call them absentee ballots, but they aren't absent. They're just, it's more convenient for me to vote by mail. So you'll see on a lot of your things, you'll see voting by mail. Then we got into the early voting. Remember, early voting was a couple days, 3 days. It's been extended to 2 weeks. It's been back to 1 week. Sometimes it's back to 2 weeks.
Ramba says with all that to do, election supervisors will handle ballots 155 days out of the year. They're also busy making sure the ballots reflect new changes, such as the new districts lawmakers recently worked through. They're checking over voter rolls to fight fraud, and they're training volunteers to use the equipment when they work at the polls. So Ramba says it makes sense that election supervisors should have the opportunity to earn the same pay as other elected officials, like the property appraiser. He says it doesn't make sense that the state is limiting election supervisors.
It has nothing to do with your budget. It's not a, you know, it's like a local administrative thing where if I'm supervisor of Leon County, I can pay my assistant $150,000 a year. I can pay my general counsel, my chief of staff more. But my particular salary is set in state law.
Miami Republican Representative Frank Artilis is pushing a measure that would tweak the calculation used to decide how much supervisors of elections should get paid and would increase the base salary. Artilis says that would result in a raise for most supervisors of elections, and he says that pay bump is long overdue.
In the 60s, most county officials were men, but most supervisors of elections were women, and the primary duty was to tally paper election ballots once every 2 years, so their salaries were considerably lower than other male county officers. Today, supervisors are responsible for administering all federal and state, county, municipal, and special district elections in counties, complying with regulations in accordance with Florida Election Code, the Federal Help America Vote Act, the National Voting Rights Act, the Uniform Overseas Citizens Absentee Voting Act, the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Federal Voting Rights Laws, and collectively overseeing 11.4 million registered voters in Florida.
But many lawmakers on the panel argued Florida's election supervisors aren't exactly at the edge of poverty. The supervisor of elections in Leon County, for example, makes $114,000 a year. But that is $19,000 less than the county's property appraiser earns. And Artella says about half the state supervisor's salaries don't pass the $100,000 mark. Still, other lawmakers like Tampa Republican Representative James Grant say rather than force counties to increase salaries for the supervisors, he'd like to take the state out of the equation.
Why wouldn't we get the state out of the business of setting wages when they're not state tax dollars?
Grant says he's interested in working on a bill along those lines next year, and several other panel members agreed. Lawmakers in the House Government Operations Subcommittee voted on the bill Tuesday, and the measure failed. But later in that same committee, lawmakers voted to rehear the bill. They took an immediate vote, and this time the measure passed, 7-6. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Ronald J. Evan looks ahead to Wednesday at the Florida Capitol.
Starting at 7:30 tomorrow morning, NFL football analyst and Super Bowl coach with Indianapolis, Tony Dungy, will speak during the Florida Legislative Fellowship Group event. It's being held at the Cabinet Meeting Room. Student assessments at issue before the Senate Education Pre-K-12 Committee at 9 a.m., specifically a bill that would allow school districts to administer tests such as SAT and ACT instead of using the controversial Florida Standards Assessments to measure student learning. The fantasy sports industry is up for discussion at the Senate Regulated Industries Committee at 9. There's legislation designed to protect the industry. It would make it clear that fantasy games are not subject to the state's gambling laws. At 1 p.m. before the Senate Children, Families, and Elder Affairs Committee, AARP and the Department of Elder Affairs will offer a presentation about improving the ability of seniors to stay in their communities. Also at 1 p.m., the Senate Fiscal Committee will consider a bill that calls for the creation of a Holocaust memorial in the Capitol complex. The House will hold a 3:30 floor session. Also at 3:30, a death penalty workshop will be held. In the wake of the U.S. Supreme Court decision that found Florida's death penalty sentencing system is unconstitutional. Those are some of the legislative agenda highlights for tomorrow. I'm Ronald J. Evans.
Finally tonight, remember those schoolyard days of monkey bars and tetherball filling the recess time? In Florida, that time is optional for schools and school districts. And while some kids get to enjoy recess, others don't. Now the state legislature is stepping in to restore recess for all. And they've got some powerful backers, Florida parents. We get that story from Lynn Hatter.
About 20 Sable Palm Elementary schoolers are running around and playing on the jungle gym. Recess is starting to wind down, and it's clear some of those kids aren't ready for it to end.
5, 4, 3,
and that's recess.
And that's recess.
Sable Palm Elementary School Assistant Principal Jamaica Wallace says if she had her way, there would be recess every single day. Right now, all students are in physical education classes once a week for about 45 minutes. But recess is just for kindergartners through second grade students. Third through fifth graders do get recess only when the curriculum allows.
You guys are packing a lot into the school.
Yes, we are. Absolutely packing quite a bit in. On average, we try to give them anywhere from 2 to 3 days out of the week.
We have heard district lobbyists' unfunded mandate rhetoric. Of course it's unfunded. It needs zero funding. It has no monetary cost. It's a simple reallocation of time and priorities.
Winter Park parent Heather Millette calls herself a recess mom. She has two kids in elementary school, and she's been pushing her local district to implement mandatory recess for elementary schoolers.
It costs nothing to create an efficient schedule that has a net gain of maximizing learning retention. It means that districts would be forced to have a few less minutes on test prep software, and we're okay with that.
Dozens of parents from Hillsborough, Pinellas, Orange, and Leon counties spoke before lawmakers Tuesday. The time recess proponents are advocating for is small, just 20 minutes a day of uninterrupted playtime for kids. There are few disagreements on the value of recess. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control cited its value in education in a 2014 report. For advocates, recess is a no-brainer. It's good for kids, and it works. But there is a problem. Florida schools and their districts face the pressure of having to perform well on state standardized tests. Funding and even a teacher's job depends on that performance. And Sable Palm Assistant Principal Jamika Wallace says that's not an excuse. It's the reality.
And so we do understand that PE and physical activity promotes healthy wellness. But at the same time, we're always in that constant struggle right now. And so the top of our priority list is academics.
She says when it comes to recess, there's a discord on what people want versus what schools can give.
Unless you are in the schools on a regular basis and understand what our teachers are required and asked to do by the state, then until that happens, then there is going to always be that disconnect between lawmakers, parents, and the school districts.
Republican Representative Renee Placencia's recess bill is gaining more co-sponsors, Republicans and Democrats. It calls for 100 minutes of play a week for public elementary school students, and that play couldn't be withheld for disciplinary purposes. Placencia says he was inspired to bring the bill after parents began questioning him about the issue.
Because if our school districts aren't taking responsibility for the well-being of our children, then it's up to us to take that responsibility.
The legislation has two other committee stops in the House. Meanwhile, a Senate companion has not been heard by any committee. To local school officials, recess is a balance, and the price to play may be too high. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report, and join us again each weeknight during the 2016 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 900,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.